Yo, what is up, listeners? Welcome back to the Low Traction Show. You know, I was listening to a podcast the other day about all the legendary musicians we've lost since the turn of the century. And let me tell you, that list is stacked. I'm talking about icons from genres like rock, which absolutely dominated the 60s, the 70s, and the 80s. Now, no disrespect intended, but many of these artists, well, they're from a generation that's getting older. Just in the last 10 years, we've had to say goodbye to giants like Tom Petty, David Bowie, Aretha Franklin, Robin Gibb of the Bee Gees, Tommy Ramone from the Ramones, B.B. King, and that's just scratching the surface. Hearing that got me thinking about how similar it feels in the car world. So many models that were once the hottest things on four wheels are now disappearing. Some from old age, others are written off as obsolete. And let's be real for a minute. In the auto industry, obsolete is often just a fancy word for corporate BS. These cars weren't just machines, they were icons. And just like those musicians, their legacies deserve way more than a footnote. I'm TG, and today we're kicking off a three-part series on iconic cars that we have lost over the first quarter of this century. These are the cars that left a mark on automotive history and are revered by those who owned them. I have personally owned or driven some of these cars on this list, and honestly, I'm still not over the fact that these lovely cars, each with unique personalities, are gone, potentially forever. In this first episode, we're focusing on lightweight sports cars. The cars that were all about agility, precision, and pure driving joy. So let's dive in and celebrate those automotive icons. Car number one, Honda S2000. Picture this. It's year 1995. Honda is turning 50 years old, and CEO slash company president Nobuhiko Kawamoto issues a challenge to his engineers. Build a car that reminds the world who we are. No focus groups, no compromise, just pure, unfiltered Honda DNA. What emerged 4 years later was the Honda S2000, a roadster so revolutionary, it reset the rulebook for driving purity. At its heart was the F20C, a 2-liter naturally aspirated four-cylinder that screamed to 9,000 RPM, a red line unheard of in production cars at the time. This wasn't just an engine, it was a mechanical symphony. Honda's engineer overbuilt it so completely that management actually forced them to downgrade components to hit cost targets. Even then, it made 120 horsepower per liter, a record that stood for a decade. Paired with a 6-speed manual so precise, Honda patented its dual synchro design. The S2000 wasn't just fast, it was alive in your hands. In 2004, Honda introduced the AP2 update, swapping the 2-liter for a 2.2 F22C engine. Purists groaned at the loss of that mythical 9,000 RPM redline, now at only 8,200. But Honda gave the people what they actually needed, more torque where they used it every day. The AP2 wasn't a step back. It was Honda refining perfection. Then in 2008, they dropped the mic with the S2000CR, which stands for Club Racer. This was the S2000 distilled to its essence. No stereo, no spare tire, just a 17% stiffer chassis, a massive rear wing, and a suspension tuned by the same team behind the legendary NSX-R. Only 699 examples were made. And today, they're unicorns, selling easily for six figures when they rarely appear. Sadly, in 2009, as the world reeled from financial crisis and automakers scrambled to ditch anything that wasn't an SUV, Honda quietly pulled the plug on the S2000. No fanfare, no final edition, just a silent exit after a decade of threatening drivers. The last car rolled off the Takanizawa factory line in June 2009, wearing Grand Prix white paint like a funeral shroud for analog driving. Honda claimed it was focusing on fuel efficiency, but let's be real. The S2000 died because it belonged to a vanishing world, one where revving to 9,000 RPM mattered more than cup holders. And that's why, even 15 years after its death, the S2000 isn't just a great Honda, it's the last true Honda. A car built not for market, but for the idea of driving itself. The S2000 name, by the way, wasn't just marketing, it was a mission statement. 2000cc engine, as it started with, 2000 RPM when the VTEC rushes, a roadster for the new millennium, and just like the Y2K, it left us wanting more when it was gone. Car number two, Mazda RX-8. Rewind to the early 2000s. Mazda had just killed the beloved RX-7, and the enthusiasts were mourning the rotary engine's extinction. But in a quiet corner of Hiroshima, a team of engineers was plotting a comeback. Their mission? Build a rotary power car that could actually fit four people. The result? The 2003 RX-8. It wasn't just a sports car. It was a Hail Mary pass for an entire technology. At its heart was the Renesis rotary. This 1.3-liter twin rotor wasn't just an engine. It was a mechanical paradox. It revved to 9,000 RPM with turbine-like smoothness, yet it required oil injections like a two-stroke dirt bike. Why? Because rotaries don't use piston rings. They rely on apex seal that need constant lubrication. Owners had to check the oil every other gas stop. And Mazda even installed a dedicated oil metering pump just to keep it alive. This wasn't a quirk, it was a lifestyle. But here's the genius. That same oil-hungry design made the Renesis nearly indestructible at high RPMs. While piston engines shook themselves apart, rotaries thrived on abuse. The RX-8's motor could bounce off the rev limiter for hours, which is exactly why Mazda's racing division loved it. Speaking of racing, the RX-8's 24 hours of Le Mans legacy is criminally overlooked. In 2003, a Renesis-powered prototype finished 7th overall, a rotary beating V8s and turbos twice its size. On street circuits, too, the RX-8 dominated the Grand-Am Cops for years, thanks to that silky power delivery and unbreakable chassis. But the real magic was in the packaging. Those suicide doors, they weren't just cool. They gave the RX-8 a backseat you could actually use, something no RX-7 ever offered. And that 50-50 weight balance? Pure witchcraft for a car with rear seats. For a brief moment, it worked. Journalists praised the RX-8's razor-sharp steering and howling engine note. It even won Wheels magazine's Car of the Year in 2003. But the cracks soon showed. Rotary engines drink oil by design, and emissions regulations tightened like a noose. By 2012, after just 9 years, Mazda pulled the plug. The last RX-8 rolled off the line in June 2012, taking Mazda's rotary dreams with it. The RX-8 wasn't just discontinued, it was the last production car ever with a rotary engine. Mazda has since teased a rotary comeback as a range extender for EVs, but the RX-8 remains the last true rotary-powered sports car. So now you should understand why the RX-8 was iconic. It was a car that dared to be different. It wasn't the fastest or the most powerful. It definitely wasn't perfect, but it had character. A four-seater rotary-powered coupe with suicide doors. It sounded like a mad scientist's sketchpad ideas, yet Mazda built it. And for a fleeting moment, they made the impossible just practical enough to sell. That's the RX-8's real legacy. Proof that magic exists, even if it doesn't last. Drop my top and we'll breathe the Car number three, Mitsubishi Lancer Evolution. Just moments ago, we were talking about the Mazda RX-8, that high-revving rotary rebel that danced to its own mechanical rhythm. But now, we're shifting gears to something even more unapologetically raw. A car that didn't just break conventions, it smashed them on rally stages around the world. Of course, I'm talking about the Mitsubishi Lancer Evolution, the turbocharged all-wheel drive titan that turned grocery getters into giant killers. This wasn't just another sporty sedan. This was a weapon forged in the fires of World Rally Championship competition. See, back in 1992, Mitsubishi needed to build a street-legal version of their rally car to qualify for Group A racing rules. So they took their humble Lancer economy car and turned it into an absolute monster. The original Evo 1 came screaming out of the gates with a turbocharged 2-liter engine pumping out 247 horsepower, which was insane for a compact car in the early 90s. But the real magic was underneath. Full-time all-wheel drive, a rally-tuned suspension, and this almost telepathic connection between the steering wheel and the road. And Hollywood took notice. Remember that red Evo 9 in Tokyo Drift? The one that made Brian's Mustang look silly in the mountain passes? That wasn't just movie magic. That was the Evo doing what it was born to do. These cars became stars in their own right, appearing everywhere from Fast and Furious films to the Need for Speed games. Over 10 generations, the Evo kept evolving, literally. The Evo 9 introduced this genius active yaw control system that could practically pivot the car through corners. By the time we got to the Evo 10 in 2007, it had space-age tech like a twin-clutch transmission and all-wheel drive system so smart it could adjust power to each wheel individually. But then, in 2016, Mitsubishi pulled the plug. No more Evos. The world has shifted to SUVs and hybrids, and this rally-bred warrior no longer fit the corporate plan. Today, clean examples sell for crazy money, especially the limited-run models like the legendary Tommy Mäkinen edition. Here's the thing about the Evo, though. It wasn't just a great car. It proved that technology born in the dirt and snow of rally stages could create something extraordinary for the street. And that legacy? That lives on every time we see a new all-wheel drive performance car hit the market. The Evo may be gone, but it'll never be forgotten. Car number four, Subaru WRX STI. And of course, we can't talk about the Evo without its arch nemesis, the Subaru WRX STI. These two were like Ali and Frazier, trading blows for decades. Where the Evo was all about surgical precision, its active yaw control pivoting you through corners like a figure skater, the STI played a different game. That boxer engine set low in the chassis, its symmetrical all-wheel drive planting all four wheels like tree roots. The Evo carved corners, the STI owned them. And for those wondering, STI isn't just a cool badge, and it definitely doesn't stand for some sort of disease here. It actually means Subaru Technica International, the company's in-house skunk works that turned ordinary Imprezas into rally champions. This is the car that made Colin McRae a legend. Picture Scotland's finest piloting a blue and gold missile through forests. His, if in doubt, flat-out philosophy perfectly matched to the STI's brutal honesty. That distinctive EJ engine note, that angry, uneven brah-brah-brah, became the soundtrack to Subaru's golden era in the WRC. From 1995 to 1997, Subaru dominated with three consecutive manufacturer's titles. In 95, McRae became Britain's first WRC champion in the iconic GC8 Impreza STI, a car so capable it made the impossible look routine. Then came Peter Solberg, who didn't just drive the STI, he performed a high-speed ballet. Watch his 2003 championship season, and you'll see a man who treated every corner like a physics problem to be solved with opposite lock. The car wasn't just reacting, it was an extension of his nervous system. What made the STI special wasn't just the trophies. It was how that rally DNA translated to the road. The symmetrical all-wheel drive system wasn't some marketing gimmick. It was battle-proven technology that could claw through snow, dirt, or your local back road with equal tenacity. That big wing, functional downforce. The intercooler scoop, necessary for taming that turbocharged fury. Even after Subaru left factory rallying in 2008, the STI kept the faith, dominating Pikes Peak, setting records at the Nürburgring, and becoming the weapon of choice for grassroots racers worldwide. Today, hearing that signature boxer rumble isn't just nostalgia. It's a reminder of when rally cars were raw, analog, and dripping with personality. But here's the tragic twist. Both these icons met the same fate. The Evo got axed in 2016, the STI in 2021. Blame emissions, blame SUVs, blame the world losing its taste for raw, unfiltered performance. That final STI with its 310 horsepower and 6-speed manual, it wasn't just a car. It was a eulogy for an era we'll never see again. Yet here's the beautiful part. Their rivalry never really died. Go to any Cars and Coffee today, you'll still see Evos and STIs parked side by side. Their owners arguing over which was faster. And that's how it should be, because these weren't just cars. They were the last samurai of an analog age. Car number 5, BMW Z3 M Coupe. In the late 1990s, BMW's M division took an unexpected detour from its usual playbook. Rather than developing another refined high-performance coupe, they created something far more unconventional. The 1998 to 2002 BMW Z3 M Coupe, later nicknamed the Clown Shoe. It kind of looked like a German bread van mated with a roadster. Despite its polarizing design and parts being engineering, it's now a six-figure collector's item. The M Coupe was not originally part of BMW's product plan. It began as a skunkworks project, spearheaded by engineer Burkhard Gürtel, who saw potential in reinforcing the Z3 Roadster chassis with a fixed roof. Unlike traditional coupes, which are designed from the ground up, the M Coupe was built on the Z3 platform, but with significant reinforcements to improve rigidity. The body design was a functional necessity. The elongated rear hatch accommodated the suspension of cargo space, while the controversial proportions were a byproduct of adapting a roadster into a coupe. The styling, penned by BMW Design Works, was divisive, but its shape was dictated as much by aerodynamics as by packaging constraints. Under the hood, BMW installed the S52 inline-6, which is a 240 horsepower engine from the E36 M3 in the US models, while European versions initially received S50, which has a higher horsepower rating. In 2001, the more powerful S54 engine, with 315 horsepower in the US and 325 horsepower in Europe, was introduced, shared with the E46 M3. The M Coupe suspension was a mix of old and new as well. Front suspension from the E36 Z3. Rear suspension was borrowed from the E33 series, a design dating back to the 1980s. This setup, combined with a short 96.8-inch wheelbase and rear-biased weight distribution, made this car exceptionally agile, but also notoriously tail-happy. Early models lacked traction control, requiring precise throttle control to manage oversteer. Initial reviews were mixed. Critics questioned its looks and raw driving dynamics. Yet over time, enthusiasts came to appreciate its purity. Production numbers were also quite limited. In the US market, only 2,858 units total were delivered. Out of those, only 678 were equipped with the S54 engine. Today, well-maintained S54 examples could sell for over $100,000 US, a testament to its cult following. BMW never built anything like it again, but its influence is seen in later compact performance cars like the 1M Coupe, which we're also talking about in this episode, and even modern hot hatches. The M Coupe's legacy is one of defiance. Against convention, against focus groups, and against the idea that every performance car must fit a mode. It was a rare moment when BMW's engineers went crazy, and that's why, decades later, the clown show remains one of the most fascinating chapters in M Division history. Car number 6, BMW 1M Coupe. BMW in the early part of this millennium was on a roll. In 2011, BMW's M Division, under pressure to cut costs, slapped a turbocharged N54 inline 6 into a 1 Series coupe, bolts on some flared fenders, and called it a day. They planned to build just 2,700 units worldwide. What they didn't plan, creating an instant classic. They sold every single one of those 2,700 units in under 6 months. Dealers had waiting lists longer than the line at a DMV. Why? Because this was BMW's greatest accidental hero. A parts-bin special that became an instant legend. They used leftover M3 control arms and Z4 suspension bits to save money. The fenders were widened just enough to fit wider tires, giving it that angry toddler stance. Even the paint options were an afterthought. Valencia Orange was chosen because it was cheap to produce. The 1M Coupe was a rebel in BMW's lineup. No fancy adjustable suspension, no dual clutch option, just a 340 horsepower engine, a 6-speed manual, and a mechanical limited slip diff. It was raw, slightly unhinged, and brilliant. Journalists called it the best M car in decades because it drove like an E30 M3 reincarnated. Oversteer on demand, turbo lag that kept you honest, and the stubby wheelbase that made every back road feel like a rally stage. But by 2012, just 2 years into its production run, it was gone. And here's why this legendary car was so short-lived. Firstly, it was a financial afterthought. BMW used leftover E93 M3 control arms, Z4 suspension bits, even off-the-shelf N54 turbochargers to keep costs down. The entire project was green-lit only because the bean counter said, fine, but make it cheap. Secondly, new EU and US regulations during the early 2010s demanded lower CO2 and particulate emissions. The N54's high-pressure direct injection and twin turbos, which made it a tuner's dream, also made it regulators' nightmare. It was being phased out for the newer and more efficiency-friendly N55. Last but not least, at $47,000 US, the 1M was at least $13,000 cheaper than a bare-bone E92 M3, but 90% as fun. With options, a loaded M3 could cost easily twice as much as a 1M. BMW got nervous and pulled the plug before it hurt their halo car sales. Today, the 1M is a highly sought-after modern classic, largely thanks to its limited production numbers. Remember we said BMW planned to build only 2,700 examples of this car? They quietly increased that number to 6,309 due to popular demand. Of those, 1,015 units came to the US. Only 740 were Valencia Orange, the color that defined this car. There was a single factory-sanctioned prototype with a manual handbrake, while all production cars had electronic brakes. It was sold at an auction for $250,000 US. These days, clean 1Ms easily trade for over $100,000, almost triple their original price. Why? Because it was the last M car that felt built by enthusiasts for enthusiasts. And guys, that wraps up part one of our tribute to the 20 most iconic cars we've lost in the past 25 years. Let's take a quick look back at the legends we've covered today. The Honda S2000, the last pure high-revving roadster Honda ever built, the Mazda RX-8, final guardian of the rotary engine's flame, the Mitsubishi Evo, a ready-bred warrior that conquered both stages and video game screens. Its arch-rival, the Subaru WRX STI, a name that began as a homologation special for rally dominance, then evolved into a street-legal tribute to Subaru's racing legacy. Then we have the BMW's clownshoe Z3 M Coupe, the oddball that became a cult classic. And finally, the BMW 1M, a limited-run bargain that's now considered one of the greatest M cars of all time. But this is just the beginning. In parts 2 and 3, we'll be revving through everything from hot hatches to American muscle to exotic supercars, each with their own unforgettable story. Trust me, you won't want to miss what's coming next. Until then, keep the passion alive. Whatever cars you are taking out today, hope you are enjoying the drive. See you next time.